I think some of the biggest news to happen in the industry this over the last couple of weeks is fairly monumental, and it's to do with Apple buying the company Pullstring.
Yeah.
Now, unless you've been watching the industry for years and years and years, you probably won't. That probably won't factor as a big deal for you, but it is absolutely huge.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. As always, on our monthly news digest, I'm joined by Craig Pugsley from Studio Flow. Hey, Craig.
Hello, Lucy. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm really good.
Good. You're always good, to be fair. You're a very happy chappy.
I'm quite excited about everything, especially all the news we've got coming up this week.
There's been really exciting news this month. I'm excited too.
Yeah, some really, really super exciting things, some crazy things, some like ways the industry's moving things, and then a bit of a ground shift, which we'll save to last.
Absolutely.
Teasing.
I'm excited.
Super exciting. Can I do a little advert, little pitch?
Of course you can.
Thank you. So my agency is called Studio Flow, and we sponsor this podcast, and that's why I'm here. I just wanted to tell all our listeners what we do really briefly. So we're a design studio specializing in emerging technology. So anything that isn't iOS, Android, or the web, that's our specialism. And we help brands create voice apps by translating their brand into a personality that their customers can talk to. And that means just creating wonderful little experiences on this new wave of voice assistants that we're talking about on these podcasts that their consumers can engage with to create meaningful experiences. And that's what we do, user research and design.
Very awesome what you do.
It's super cool.
Yeah, it is.
Really, really interesting stuff, actually. And it's always the thing that's, as you can tell from us and the stories that we cover on these podcasts, it's just the thing I find most fascinating, right? It's like a brand new way of engaging with customers and giving them the real value, right? Like the getting them to the core of what it is they actually want to do with an app or website really quickly.
Yeah, and you do it in such a creative way. Like, it's just really innovative, I think, the way you do it. You really add the personality and the kind of, just the human element, I guess.
Because it has to be, right? Like, it's got to... Because humans are hardwired to want to talk to something that is almost a bit like a human.
Mm.
And they, you know, expect emotion and they expect personality and they expect something behind the voice. And I think that's what we try and bring to the table when we're building this stuff. But of course, there's some really good, solid, you know, research techniques and like just good design UX that we need to bring to the table on building these products as well. Otherwise, people just won't use them. So it's got to be good, basically.
Absolutely, yeah. If you want to know more about Studio Flow, we actually interviewed you, didn't we, way back when?
Oh, my goodness.
On episode 7. So if anyone does want to know a little bit more about Studio Flow and some of the most interesting projects that Craig's worked on, then, yeah, check out podcast episode 7.
All right, that's the pitch over. Let's get down to
pitch
it.
Pitch done. So, so many exciting news stories this week. One I quite like is IKEA finally kind of peaked a little bit on their plans to dominate the smart home market. Did you see that?
I did. They are so well placed to do this as well, aren't they?
They're the most well placed.
Because everyone loves a bit of IKEA.
Yeah. The thing that surprises me is they haven't actually launched it. They kind of very quietly released these two models of like smart blinds on their German online site.
Which is like a bit weird.
Very weird. I mean, especially considering, you know, CES 19, you know, was literally 4 weeks ago or whatever it was. Why didn't they make a splash there?
I swear, it's odd, isn't it? Maybe IKEA don't need to. Maybe they just think, you know, because people get properly obsessed with IKEA stuff. It's like a cult, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, there's all the upcycling websites and stuff that people use, you know, the upcycle bookcases into cars and crazy stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's why maybe IKEA just thought, we're just going to do something of our own in this space, and we're just going to release it on into our stores, and people are just going to love it. And they're probably not wrong.
No, they're not wrong. And to be fair, the way they've done it, I think it's really, they've done it really well. Like, things like the brackets for these blinds are exactly the same as their normal blinds. So, you know, in your home, you don't have to change anything about your existing blinds to replace them seamlessly with a smart blind.
That's a big deal as well, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? Huge. Like, you don't want to be taking brackets down in your house to kind of up tech, really. Like, you know, it should just... The whole thing about tech, and this is something we talk about all the time, is seamless integration.
Mm.
And I think... They I mean, they were always going to do that well, because that is kind of what they do. But also, fairly affordable, I think. Like, one pair, €99, which I think that's decent.
I tell you what, that's really good, actually. Because I looked into it. You know, we've talked about this in the past. Everything in my home has got a connection of some degree, much to the disappointment of my wife. And I looked into the curtains because I was like, right, I want those to sort of do the whole dancing thing of an mm-hmm. evening when we're out, right? And I want that to be automatic. And I looked into it and it was hundreds of pounds, like 400 or 500 quid to get a curtain, like, motory thing. Prohibitively expensive, right? Even, you know, even for me with all the stuff I've got. But yeah, £99, really good price point. And the thing I've always loved about IKEA as a designer, obviously there's the aesthetic element to it. Yeah, obviously the stuff that IKEA make looks great, very minimalist, very Swedish, you know, I love that design aesthetic anyway. But from a functional design perspective, their products are really, really good. They're really easy to put together, you know, everyone knows this. They last for a long time and they are deeply functional, right?
You say easy to put together, you've never seen me with a flat pack. I mean, honest to God.
But you've got to think it's like adult Lego.
Yeah, no, it is.
It's a bit of that, right?
I mean, I was never great at Lego as a child, so maybe I should have passed on that. But yeah, I nearly had a nervous breakdown once because of IKEA furniture.
Maybe it's the nerd in me, just like loves a set of instructions and we had to go through one after the other. Now yeah. Put this into there, now press this button, now do this. Yeah. And then ta-da, look what I've made.
Yes, yeah, see, I imagine you're better at that than me. Like, I'm very, like, with recipes or anything like that, I just can't follow, rules or recipes. I need to just do my own thing.
You go freestyle, yeah?
Yeah, I just freestyle. Like, I was in a dance class the other day and there was set moves and I was just, you know, freestyling the
You were back. Like, screw this.
Yeah, like,
I don't need your dance moves.
Yeah, I'm doing me, you know?
Let me show you what I can bring to this table. Yeah. So do you, like, when you're doing the IKEA stuff then, do you just, like, bash the stuff as hard as you can until it sort of all fits?
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Well, I mean, ultimately, I'm not going to sit on one of your sofas, but that's a way of getting to the end result, right?
Yeah.
And then it's yours. It's like jazz IKEA. Freestyle.
Yeah, yeah, it's all got quirks, you know?
Quirks.
Do it my way.
Deviated slightly.
It's probably why it doesn't work, though, to be fair. I mean, it's not IKEA's fault, is it? That's probably more my fault.
They should have been more accommodating to your style of building. This is it. It's never the user's fault, right? One of the mantras of product design, never the user's fault.
That's very true. They should be like a Lucy manual and then like a general public manual.
No, because your manual would be like step one, just be you.
You just do you.
Just do you.
Yeah.
And here's the helpline number.
Yeah. Yeah. For counselling afterwards. Yeah. It's so traumatised for the experience.
Should we just quickly talk about the tech that they've got as well as the blinds? Because there's some other interesting stuff. So they've had smart light bulbs and smart sockets out for a while, actually. And they're bringing HomeKit integration into those as well. And we've seen this through a few manufacturers. You know, they release Alexa integration first because that's, you know, Amazon done a really, really good job of partnering with companies that are doing smart home stuff. And then Amazon, and then now Google are doing a really, really good job as well. So Google Assistant is like on everything as well. But Apple's strategy with HomeKit has always lagged a bit behind. So HomeKit's their version of the kind of smart integration to get Siri support. But for a while, they required vendors to actually build in hardware, physical hardware chips inside the products, which of course pushes the price up. Mm. So it was more secure, and from a privacy perspective, that was all really good. And it was, you know, a very worthy thing for Apple to be doing, right? But it pushes the price up. So now they changed their mind. They figured out a way of doing all the encryption and security stuff with software instead of hardware. And now, you know, many more vendors are kind of taking it on. But of course, it goes hand in hand with the adoption of Siri, right? A lot of people are either, you know, just so pissed off with Siri because it doesn't work that they don't use it, or they just use it for the kind of assistant stuff. They're not really integrated into smart home systems yet. You know, they're third place. But just like every other vendor, I think IKEA have seen that they need to support all the major platforms. Apple's one of them, so they're going to support it as well. And I think they're really well placed to do this, right?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, super cool. Absolutely. Cool. So the next news story that I'd like to talk about is the whole fact that, you know, Amazon HQ2 was set to open up in Queens, Long Island, New York City, and they've rejected it.
Oh, there it is, right?
Massive news, isn't it?
It is. It's really, really big news for the US, really big news for Amazon. Now, who are the winners and the losers here? Like, what's the story?
I mean, to be honest, so the talk is that the residents rejected it because they feared that it would push up house prices, because it was going to provide 25,000 jobs to New York City.
That's a lot of jobs, right?
Yeah, so already there's 5,000 employees within New York City hired by Amazon, so there's going to be another 25,000. On average, Amazon said that they were going to pay people around 150,000 a year on average. So naturally that was going to kind of push up house prices with all the new people in the city and on, you know, decent wages. So there was fear around that. There was fear around, you know, the lower income families being pushed out of the city where they went, where they were from. So all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I can see why there was resistance in that way. But equally, it was going to cost New York City, I think, $3 billion. But they were potentially going to make $27
billion. Yeah.
Like, surely, I totally understand the concerns. And obviously, it's like a political and economical debate, this. So I don't want to get too heavy into it. But surely, there would have been a way to kind of make that work. Because I think it would have been amazing to have the HQ2 in New York City.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like it's a little bit maybe of a missed op, a bit of a shame.
I think there's an interesting ethical tech angle here as well, because this effect has been seen when big tech companies invest heavily or come into a big area. It has bigger changes than I think anyone could have adopted.
Like San Fran.
It's the San Fran thing, exactly that, and Airbnb. And Airbnb have done this now elsewhere, you know, where they'll... So there's the San Fran tech bubble and pushing everyone else out.
Yeah.
And that's compounded by the Airbnb kind of bubble as well, where it pushes all of the house prices up because everyone's renting all their houses out.
Yeah.
There's no local residents there anymore. And it's just really difficult for local people to stay in the area, and it just pushes them out. And I don't think, you know, no one in tech wants that to happen. No one in tech really, you know, wants people, the local people, to be pushed out so that they can come in instead. But it's just an unforeseen side effect of the growth of, you know, the tech that they're bringing into the area.
Yeah.
Whether it's a new product or whether it's a new company. And I think, you know, we've got to, I think, as an industry, we've just got to think a bit more about the impact of our actions, you know?
I agree, but I think also what we do is so innovative. Surely there's ways that we can innovate around it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? That's absolutely 100% the message, right? Like, we're all about creating products really, really quickly that satisfy users' needs, right? And add the real user value. Now, that doesn't have to just be the ones that make us the profits in the short term. Those could be the products that help those local families, you know, remain in their homes or, you know, whatever that is, right? We've got the tools to solve these problems in the industry.
Yeah.
We can do this, but we do need to be more conscious about it. We need to be more aware of the impact our decisions and our you know, the push that we're making into the spaces is going to have to the people that are going to be affected by them, may not realise. Right?
I agree. Yeah.
We need to be more diligent.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, the reaction of the people in New York was it was massively passionate, and I think it just goes to show they feel like they've been stung already by this kind of thing in other cities in the US, obviously, like we talk about San Fran. So yeah, it's a sensitive topic. I just hope that innovation can be used sort of better in the future to embrace it rather than reject it, I guess.
And Amazon do need to be a little bit careful as well with some of these big decisions that they're making. You know, the HQ2 and the premise for those is something that's been on the cards that they've been talking about various states in the US for many, many years now. And this was a big decision that they made and then retracted on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think they need to be a little bit careful from a PR perspective.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Next story. Now, last podcast, was it? Or maybe the podcast before last? We were talking about your smart assistant situation.
Oh, yeah.
The saga at home.
Still undecided, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. So we were talking about which one would suit you, which one suits your lifestyle, which one should you go for? Because it is tricky, right? Like, there's so many out there, and they're all varying, you know, good at varying things. But I think I promised at the time I'd find you the perfect one. I think I have.
Have you really?
Yeah. So.
Oh, yay.
Here it is. This is.
By the way, guys, this is the first time I'm seeing this as well. This isn't pre-rehearsed.
It doesn't work very well on audio podcasts.
No, it doesn't. We should have filmed this. Okay, so basically, Craig is just showing me Google Home Hub Chalk. Do you know what? What?
So Google Home, have got obviously the Google Home.
Yeah.
It looks like an air freshener.
Yeah.
And they got the Mini. And this is one of their first devices that's got a screen to it. So it's basically Google Assistant with this little screen. But I think for you, this would be perfect, right? Because not only is it all the stuff that's great about Google Assistant and Google Home.
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk to it from across the room. You know, in fact, from across multiple rooms, this one works. I bought one of these recently in our house, so I've been testing it. But it's showing you interesting stuff as well, right? Like it shows you, let me scroll down and I'll show you. I'm showing the website at the minute. It's the here's a quote from The Verge, the best digital photo frame ever made. Because what it does is it pulls your photos from your phone.
Yeah. So, wait a minute, is this a new version of the Home Hub, or is this the Home Hub?
This is the Home Hub they released a few, probably about 6 months ago.
Okay.
6 months ago.
Yeah, no, I do know this. And actually, when I was sort of weighing up all my options, this was probably the one that pulled me most.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it has got some awesome features. And I think, because I am quite creative and visual,
yeah,
it's definitely the most well suited for that.
Yeah.
And in the kitchen, it works brilliantly.
Mine's in the kitchen, and it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Really, really good. But it's got some really interesting little bits of tech, right? So it's got an ambient light sensor in it,
mm-hmm,
that also measures the colour of the light in the room as well. So it'll automatically adjust the screen so that the photos don't look like they're on a tablet, on a display. The photos actually look like they're sort of printed photos on the wall.
Oh, I like that.
It's really clever.
Yeah.
But it just does everything that Google are really, really good at.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this kind of seamless integration into your life. So they're doing some really crazy stuff with your photos in the background to figure out what's interesting,
mm-hmm,
right? And I say that with air quotes, interesting, right? So it's like it recognises people in your family, recognises your friends, it will show more pictures of those people. It's actually done some interesting like collages as well, where it's put the pictures of my two kids next to each other doing interesting stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
That's not a picture I took. Like, it's figured out that that's an interesting photo, or an interesting thing to display, and it's put them next to each other.
I wonder what the algorithm behind that is.
I reckon there must be some seriously hardcore stuff that it's doing in the background.
So interesting. I love that.
It's just beautiful. It's really, really good. So it's, I think, for a couple of reasons, it's really good for you. It's got a lovely screen. It's about this big, actually. And I say holding up my hands on an audio podcast. Right? So it's not huge.
Yeah.
So you can just tuck it away somewhere nice. It looks really nice as well. It's mainly the screen, but the back of it uses the Apple, Google's like design language they've been using on all their products recently, with this kind of material design.
I like that.
A couple of different colours as well. So you can kind of match it into whatever you've got going.
I like the kind of rosy gold. I like that.
To be honest, it's lovely.
Yeah,
it is quite nice. It doesn't have a camera, so you've got no like privacy concerns with it. It doesn't do any of that kind of stuff.
Okay, because that is my kind of only concern, I think, is, you know, if you wanted to have it in the bathroom or the bedroom or something. I don't know,
yeah,
it's just a bit weird. I hate the thought of having a camera on me.
Yeah, it is a bit odd. And I think that's where kind of, we talked about this last time with Facebook's device.
Yeah.
That's where it kind of falls down a bit.
Yeah,
really.
The portal.
People get a bit sceptical about it. And that's a deliberate choice for them not to put a camera on it. But it can show you, it shows you the weather. This ambient screen comes up and it shows you what's kind of happening in your calendar and the weather. And when you ask for the weather, it shows a lovely animation. And it's just, it kind of brings the whole thing to life. Rather than it being this kind of voice in the corner of the room.
Mm-hmm.
A bit disembodied, it kind of brings the whole experience to life a bit more in a way that only Google Assistant can do, really.
Yeah, no, that's good. I get them all a bit confused. I know we did an episode a couple of weeks ago, didn't we, and we sort of broke them all down, which I really enjoyed. I mean, even from then, I do still get it a little bit confused in my head, because I did think that the Home Hub had a camera. So that's kind of good that it doesn't. I mean, I guess as well, a lot of them that do have cameras, they do have caps, and they have like the little internal, you can switch off the camera or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that is well placed for me. So thank you for doing a bit of research for me.
That's all right.
I love that.
Yeah, that's it. So the perfect one. The other thing it does, which I think would be super cool for you, is that it can expand out into smart home support in the future as well.
Okay.
So it becomes like a super light switch.
Okay.
You drag it down, you can see all the things you've got in your home. So if you want to add like smart light bulbs or smart light switches, but you don't want to do loads, you want to add bits and pieces,
mm-hmm,
this thing will support them really well going forward as well. So it's going to last you for a while.
Brilliant. I love a bit of longevity.
Mm-mm-mm. There it is.
Brilliant. Right. Now for the big one. I am super excited about
this. You're really excited about this.
Yeah, I am.
Good.
Because I'm not a car person at all.
Yep.
I mean, honestly, I don't have a car currently, but when I did have a car, people would say, oh, what do you drive? And I'd be like, it's red. Like, no, I still don't know to this day what car I had.
I kind of do that as well, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of a car, right?
Exactly. Like, who cares? All I need to know is the colour. When I'm in the car park and I've lost it, as long as I know the shade, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'll find it eventually.
Yeah.
But I've been looking into the Tesla Model 3. Obviously, there's a massive amount of talk around it.
Yeah.
And I do love it.
Yeah.
I want it.
Oh, God. What have they done? Tesla are... And Elon Musk, right? This is all coming from Elon Musk. He is the master of PR.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the master of creating products and engineering and design and like customer support and being a Twitter god and all that other kind of stuff, right? Like, he is next president. yeah. I could argue, right? Like,
yeah. I'm about to start president. Reading his book, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my dad got his autobiography... Was it his autobiography he got? For Christmas. And to be honest, Dad wasn't a fan at all, but I want to read it. So, yeah, that's my next book.
He's such an inspirational guy. Whether you think he's a Bond villain in disguise and he's actually just trying to take over the world,
yeah.
I'm kind of okay with that, though, right? Because if the world that he takes over becomes the world that he visions, then I'm there.
I love his brain.
He's just brilliant.
Yeah. It's,
yeah, he's amazing. So his strategy has been... With Tesla to create a market for electric cars, right? That's the thing, to move people away from fossil fuels. And his strategy was to release a really expensive car that was like super attractive, really fast, very sexy, like just the high-end kind of motorheads would want to buy it. That was the Roadster. And then he would use the money he made from that to make a slightly cheaper car, and that was the X. And then he would use the money he made from that basically to keep doing this until he could hit the mass market with a car that was affordable. So mm-hmm. brought all the innovations around, you know, electric motors and around battery technology and around kind of autonomous driving to the mass market. And with the Model 3, he's kind of got there. And this is the one that you're excited about, yeah?
Yeah.
Mm. So, like, there's a different... Obviously, the Model S has been around for a few years. It's been out in the market for a while, you know, and it's got ludicrous mode and it's got Mad Max driving for the autonomy on the highway, so you can get it to you know, weave in and out of traffic for you in a Mad Max style, and it's got a huge amount of range, because obviously for an EV driver this has been a big deal for a while, you know. Like when I had an electric car, I had about 65 miles on it that I could drive with it. So you have range anxiety on that if you go any distance, right?
Yeah.
You've got to plan your route. But most of them, all the Tesla cars have a minimum range of a sort of a 250 miles,
right?
So that's loads, right? That's plenty.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the Model 3 is their attempt to get it to a price point that's cheap enough for not the mass market, maybe, but certainly a lot of people.
Yeah, like they're pitching it at the mass market, aren't they? They're saying this is something that, you know, everyone could potentially afford at some point. But yeah, to be fair, I mean, like I couldn't afford it, you know, as I am. But I think, what is it? I mean, to be honest, I'm a bit confused about the pricing, because I thought it was about $35,000. But then it's, if you go on their website, though, it's $42,900. But then when you go to checkout, it's got $3,750 off for incentives, I mean. Yeah. And then $4,300 off for gas savings. It's a funny way to work it out. They've kind of done all these calculations, which... I mean, I trust Tesla. I trust that they've worked it out well. But how can you work out future gas savings? You know, fuel goes up and down all the time. Yeah. It depends what car you drive. It depends how far you drive. I find that all a little bit odd.
So they are progressive in every way, apart from their pricing structure.
Their pricing structure was so weird. I was like, I was on their website. I was like, am I on the right site? I clicked the wrong button. Yeah, but that's how they break it down when you go to checkout.
Yeah, but so yeah, like in every other regard, it's basically more of a computer on wheels than it is a car with an electric engine, right? But when it comes to pricing, it's weird. So they say $35,000. You can have an electric car, you can have a Tesla electric car for $35,000, but if you want the extended range model, which takes it from, you know, around 260 miles to 310 miles, you've got to pay an extra $4,000 or $5,000 on top of that.
Yeah.
If you want the autonomy features, it's $4,000 to $5,000 on top of that. If you want colour options, it's on top of that. Like, it's classic car pricing, right? You go in with that bottom line and you say, oh, you should probably have this option as well. They even do clever stuff, right? I don't use that word, actually. Clever's not the right word. They do sneaky stuff where they'll say, if you pay for autonomy features now, you'll pay this amount, $4,000 or $5,000. But if you want it aftermarket, it's going to cost you $7,000.
Yeah, I saw that.
That's a bit cheeky.
It is cheeky. It's a strange approach. Yeah, their whole approach of Homestream is very modular, isn't it? They're kind of, it's like all these add-ons. But yeah, to kind of give you more of an advantage before than after launch is, it's strange.
And this is to encourage people to obviously take it before they buy it. But it's literally just a switch.
Yeah.
That all Model 3s, all Model S's that get shipped now have all the hardware they need. In fact, on the Model S's, it's a different story on the batteries of the Model S's. Some of the Model S's actually have a higher capacity battery than you're able to use.
Right.
So they may ship with, you might buy the Model S, the 75D, for example, right? 75 kilowatt hours of battery, but it actually comes with a 90 kilowatt hour battery. It's just the software limits it to 75.
Right.
So you can pay via the touchscreen in the car to upgrade your car from a 75 kilowatt hour battery to a 90 kilowatt hour battery. And all it does is just unlock the rest of it in the software. Yeah. You're actually carrying around a bigger battery all the time.
See, that's kind of... The sales part of me is like, that's amazing.
Yeah, right?
But the other part is like, how annoying is that? I've already got it.
I don't want to know that information.
Yeah,
right?
It's frustrating.
But of course, every Tesla owner is going to know that. And Isn't that a perfect piece of marketing?
Yeah.
From Elon Musk. That is absolutely genius. No, give them the bigger battery. Just don't let them have it until they pay for it.
He is a genius.
Absolute evil genius, yeah.
I mean, I'm going to marry him at some point, but I don't know when.
Get in the queue.
Yeah.
I'm going first.
Oh.
Yeah, sorry about
We're
that.
We're up against each other.
Yeah, you could both. Marry him. I'm sure it'd be fine.
I mean, yeah, maybe he's into that.
He's very progressive.
He is. I mean, he's open-minded, so.
Very open-minded.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, anyway.
Should we just talk through some of the best features?
Let's do that. So it's got, so they've deliberately positioned it as well not to eat into the Model S market. Mm-hmm. That's the challenge. So Model S is what, 60,000-70,000 pounds.
Yeah.
The Model 3 will be around 35 to start with when it comes to the UK second half of this year. But the difference in spec is very, very very unique, very different. So the Model S, they say, can do 0 to 60, 2.4 seconds.
Right.
Now, 2.4 seconds is a very short time. And I don't know if I've ever been in any kind of vehicle moving at that speed that can do 0 to 60 in 2.4 seconds. I don't know what that feels like.
No.
Like 2.4 seconds, that's like 1, 2, done. And yeah, it's at 60 miles an hour, right?
Yeah, that's crazy.
What is that all about? That is insane. But the Model 3 can still do it in... It's not like the Model 3 is a slouch. It can do it in 3.3 seconds. That's not much off what the S can do.
No.
So that's still really, really, really quick.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So not to 60 in 3.3. It's got the two sizes of battery pack. So the range is got two kind of units. So it's, they say 264 miles of range for the entry level, 310 miles of range for the performance model, for the expanded range model. That's a lot of range as well, right?
Yeah. Like
that's somewhere around where the Model S starts.
Yeah.
So the Model S goes up to about 390-ish miles at the top end.
Okay.
That's super expensive. But 310 miles is very useful.
Oh, absolutely.
Range, right? Like,
I mean, you wouldn't be travelling that far without a brake anyway.
I know.
So.
No, my bladder's got more range anxiety than the car has, right? Like, my range on that is very small. But in terms of some of the other features, it's got a lot of the other features that most of the other Teslas have. So it's got all the autonomy features. So when the full autonomy that Elon Musk tweeted about yesterday, actually, he was saying that full autonomy, level 4, level 5, they say, like the top level, will be coming to his cars as a feature that people can use by the end of next year. And that's the level of autonomy where you can get in and go to sleep. And then wake up and you'll be somewhere else.
Yeah.
So not where they are now, but where they're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks that the software will be there and ready by the end of this year. But he thinks that the legislation and the kind of other bits and pieces, the infrastructure bit work that needs to go on, the legal kind of work that needs to go on, will be ready by the end of next year.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
But that will be in all these cars. That will be, that comes as standard with all the Model 3 cars that ship. It's got this gorgeous, I went and saw one actually, they've got one here in Bristol in Cribbs Causeway,
yeah,
the shopping
I remember
centre.
You saying, yeah,
I went and touched it. I did love it. It's just gorgeous. It's just lovely.
Yeah,
but it's really sparse.
Yeah, well, that's something that I love about it, though, the minimalistic. It's just so minimalistic. I love it.
Really, really minimal. Like, yeah. there's no buttons, controls, widgets, knobs, dials. Like, there's basically the steering wheel, and that's it.
Well, there's the steering wheel, there's a 15-inch screen, and there's the little sort of scrolling balls on the actual steering wheel.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's it, right?
Which is amazing for your sort of view while you're driving.
Yep.
I mean, if you think about how many distractions there are in a car on the dashboard, it's not really productive.
No, totally.
On that point, though, something probably one of the only things I don't like about it is the speedometer.
Mm.
So the speedometer's on the top left-hand side or the top right-hand side of the screen, I can't remember. But anyway, it's not very well in sight.
Yeah.
So I just don't think that's great. I mean, you literally have to take your eyes off the road to see what speed you go in.
But then that's what the Minis have had for years, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's
true. The Mini Speedo's been in the middle. And actually sitting in it, I sat in it and I had a look at where all the information was. Mm. And actually the Speedo being sat next to all the other useful information, like your range and your distance to your destination, all that stuff, was actually quite useful.
Yeah, I just kind of thought they might do something a little bit more unique. Like, I kind of imagine they'd maybe project it onto the kind of windscreen,
yeah,
or something.
That's a fairly standard thing in like higher end cars, isn't it?
Yeah,
they do, like, that stuff.
Yeah, well, they do actually. Yeah, they do. Like, or just something. I don't know. I just thought
I want it projected directly onto my retina, right? Like a laser, to be sat there, like watching my eyes, and then just project this massive number 46 that flashes red when you're going too fast or something.
High expectations.
You know? Really, yeah.
But yeah, like, I just sort of, I don't know. I thought it was just a little bit. I mean, I get they want to contain everything within their screen, but yeah, I don't know. That's the only gripe I have.
The reason,
sorry, Elon.
Yeah, oh God, this is it now. The marriage is off, I'm afraid.
I know. I just realised that. But maybe he likes someone who's got opinions.
An honesty. You reckon?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I'll
at
go
all.
Up against him.
I think he likes people who worship, literally prostrate at his feet.
Oh God, it'll never work then, will it?
He's going to be.
Yeah, no, better off without that.
Yeah, better off without that. Elon's such a bastard.
I mean, I never wanted to marry him anyway.
No, I didn't. So. I didn't either. I was just saying because I thought you wanted to.
Yeah. Oh, I'm glad we're on the same page.
I really do want to marry him.
Me too. I love
you, Elon. I love you.
I love you, Elon.
You've also got a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. I meant for being rich.
They one last thing, actually, just before we move on. The reason that it's so sparse is because Elon sees a future of these with these Teslas being taxis.
I love that we're calling him Elon.
Love the Elon. Just call him E, right?
Just E.
E dog. because he knows that these cars, ultimately the vision he's got is that you'll buy this car and you'll rent it out, mm-hmm. and it'll be running errands while you're, you know, not using it.
Yeah.
Because cars spend like 90% of their time, 95% of their time doing nothing, right? They're just sat around parked. But you know, these cars could be going out and earning you money. So that's the idea. Imagine a car that just rocks up Uber style when you want it. You don't want fiddly little buttons and controls for strangers to play with and start, you know, messing around with, right?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
So that's it. By the end of next year, when you buy these model, when these cars, you know, support it, people will be getting into them, driving around, earning you money, you know, as the owner. That's the vision he's got.
Yeah.
So it needs to be as sparse as possible.
It's redefining your own personal transport, isn't it? It's
totally.
Kind of creating a bit of a business through your own transport. It's amazing.
Love it.
Yeah, a few other things I'll just say that I like about it. Even though, do you see the plastic hubcaps? I guess you did if you went and saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like when I first saw those, I was like, plastic hubcaps? That's funny.
Uh-huh.
But apparently it is for the way it's designed, the way they're designed is it increases aerodynamicacy. Is that a word? Did I just
right.
make up that word? It increases aerodynamics by 10%. Which is
on the hubcaps?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah, super cool.
But all that stuff's important for range, though, as well, right? Like, you know, make it more aerodynamic, the more miles you get out of it. It's
exactly. Yeah, and also I looked into the aircon is actually really cool. I mean, I don't quite understand it until I see it, but basically air blows on the front dashboard. Mm-hmm. So there's no vents, is there, around the car.
Yeah.
On the front dashboard, there's one long strip of vent, if you like, and air blows up and air blows sort of, it blows horizontally and vertically.
Yeah.
And you can change the pressure on the touchscreen,
yeah,
as to which direction it blows and the power. Like, it's so amazing. I was watching the video yesterday and it's unbelievable. You can literally use two fingers to like spread it out. So if you know, if you really wanted to blow it on like a passenger or yourself, I don't know. It's hard to describe on a podcast,
yeah,
but
yeah,
definitely our listeners should check that video out. I can't remember. I'll put a link in the bio, but yeah, just super cool innovation.
Very good. Very good. Model 3, very excited. And we might have, in a future episode, some more to talk about on that one.
Yeah.
Can't say anything too much yet. But,
no.
So watch this space.
Watch this space.
Exciting times. Should we jump finally onto our big story?
Yeah.
Finish with that one? So, I think some of the biggest news to happen in the industry this over the last couple of weeks is fairly monumental, and it's to do with Apple buying the company Pullstring.
Yeah.
Now, unless you've been watching the industry for years and years and years, you probably won't, that probably won't factor as a big deal for you, but it is absolutely huge. So all of the other major players, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, they've all gone and bought a load of these startups that have helped us create the frameworks and the tooling that people like us at Studio Flow need to build great voice experiences. Apple have always been laggards on this. So it's been super difficult to build something for Siri because they've not had an open platform and the tooling hasn't been there. So that's why you don't have a richer set of skills and actions as you do for Google Assistant and Alexa. However, with the purchase of Pullstring, so this has just gone through, they paid $30 million for Pullstring. $30 million, yeah, which I think is, which is an interesting number because they've had quite a lot of investment. It's like $44 million worth of VC money that they've had going through.
That's interesting. For some reason, I thought it was closer to the 100 mil mark. I might have just made that up. Who knows? But yeah, that's
It's a lot of money that they've paid for it.
It is, but considering, you know, what it can do, I mean, it was originally powered to sort of, to kind of, it was all about toys, wasn't it? Because the founders are Pixar executives, I believe.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, so they used like Hello Barbie that was released in like 2015 and all the kind of toy voice experiences. So obviously, yeah, like the creativity and the kind of, the innovation that they can use from their their past experience and their past projects is massive.
Yeah, Pullstring are an amazing company. They've been around for years. 2011 they started, a couple of former Pixar employees. It's basically that kind of coming together of the tech world and Hollywood, storytellers coming together with like people creating smart appliances and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Their product is effectively a tool for you to create the flow that you want your digital assistant to perform. There are lots of other services. I'm a big fan of Storyflow, which is one that's just I'm good friends with the guy who creates that.
I remember you telling us about that.
Mentioned it before. Yeah, we use it a lot for prototyping and right. for sort of fairly simplistic skills. But it's a really, really great way of creating a voice experience and creating a flow, you know, and showing the kind of people what's possible. And Pullstring have been around for years and years doing exactly that. So you basically have boxes that you draw on the screen in their tool, in their creator tool. You link them up, you put the responses you want, you know, your digital assistant to say when people say certain things, and you can create lots of different responses so it sounds more human. You can then link it into your CRM and your content strategies and all the things you would expect to be able to link a platform that's heavy on content into. Mm-hmm. But it makes creating digital assistants super easy. And that's the interesting part, because that's the bit that Apple haven't got. Building something for a Siri right now, you're limited into the number of types of voice apps that you can build for Siri right now. It's so limited, in fact, that no one other than Uber or some of the big players can really do it, because they can't, you know, build the thing they want to build. And Apple haven't opened up that ecosystem to anyone else yet. So this is a big potential new avenue. And Apple's iPhone sales are declining. iOS sales of iPhones, iPads, all of those devices are that we've hit peak iPhone now. Mm-hmm. Apple realized this. They're going to be releasing a new subscription service soon with TV, movies. So they're getting into the software and they're getting into the services space. So they realize that the time of the iPhone is up and they're looking elsewhere. They're looking at watches. They're looking at embedded. They're looking at wearables. They're looking at AR, all that stuff. You know, mm-hmm. we know that they've been researching for years. This is going to be another branch now, and I think the purchase of Pullstring, the reason it's so significant is that it clearly indicates, it's a massive flag that Apple are sending up saying, not they're not saying this, but the industry can see that they are finally getting serious on doing something for voice and doing some digital assistance. So Apple have at the moment macOS, iOS, watchOS, tvOS on their Apple TV. This could see the invention effectively of SiriOS, a brand new operating system, a brand new platform for you to develop voice apps through. So not only is it cool because it's Apple, and not only is it cool because it's one of the biggest players that have been around for years that they've just bought, Pullstring, but it's cool because iOS devices that are out there right now number in the billions. It's like a 1.5 billion devices out there. It's a huge addressable market. So if you have a good set of tooling to create a voice experience inside Siri, Apple unlock that on all of those devices, all of a sudden your addressable market is absolutely huge. Like, it's to order of magnitude that they can do at the moment. And so that's why it's big. That's why it's a kind of seismic shift for the industry, really. And it's just down to Apple now to kind of mold Pullstring's product into something that developers can then start building great experiences through.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's good to see, because this is obviously something we spoke about on the last episode at CES 19. You know, Apple didn't make an appearance in the voice space at all. Their focus was on data privacy, which is something we obviously talked about last episode too. So yeah, this is exciting times. And like, you know, we talked about whether they actually would, or whether they just would just completely bypass that market, which would have been, I think, monumentally the wrong decision.
Totally.
Like, yeah. So I'm actually really excited. I'm glad that they've taken a step in that direction, and I'm excited to see what they'll kind of do with Pullstring.
And looking at this now, this is a classic Apple play, right? Mm-hmm. Apple are never first to do something with new tech. What they do is they let other people do the first step.
Absolutely.
They let other people try the products, the innovation, the bits that don't work, the bits that do work. They watch it really, really closely, and then they release a killer experience that bypasses everyone else, right?
Yeah, it's classic
Apple. They've done it time and time again. And this is exactly the same. This is exactly the same Apple play. You know, they're waiting. They've pulled string. I imagine have been turning down some fairly sizable offers from Amazon and Google over the years as well. Obviously, Apple's deal with Pullstring was going through while CES was on, mm-hmm. and the planning for that, you know, would have affected the reason they didn't go to CES. They wanted to keep things quiet. Now we know why.
Mm-hmm.
So WWDC, Apple's Developer Conference, probably in June or July this year. That's where they announced the big new tools for developers, with the new products coming to the public in the fall, so August time, August, September time. So watch this space. Maybe we could be talking about Apple's new Siri OS.
Yeah, who knows?
Future podcast.
Exciting.
Super exciting times.
Oh, well, great chatting to you as always.
You too.
And yeah, until next month, I shall see you soon.
Keep it frosty.
Bye.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Okay. Who knows?